Calling all Swifties and champions of change, Like a Girl Media is rolling out the red carpet for you with our Thrive Like a Girl contest. We're all about celebrating powerful women leaders who inspire us to dream big and push boundaries. And who embodies that spirit more than Taylor Swift herself? Here's your chance to see her live in concert. We're giving away 2 tickets to Taylor Swift's show in London on Saturday, June 22nd. Imagine being part of the magic, all thanks to Like a Girl Media. Entering is easy. Subscribe, share, and show us which episodes inspired you the most. Visit our website or check our social media for all the details. Don't just dream it, be it. Thrive like a girl and make this summer unforgettable. Contest opens globally, void where prohibited, must be 18 or older to enter, no purchase necessary. Subscribe and share with hashtag Thrive Like a Girl and tag us at likeagirl_media for entry. Unlimited entries means unlimited chances. Winner chosen at random after contest closes May 20th, 2024. Will be notified via DM. Make sure your profiles are not private. Check full rules on our site. This is your shot to see Taylor Swift live. Don't miss it. Hit Like a Girl podcast is a proud member of the Health Podcast Network. One thing I love about working with them is that they're mission-driven, which means that they're dedicated to featuring authoritative shows, hosts, and guests who take on the tough topics in healthcare with empathy, expertise, and a commitment to excellence. If you're looking for bingeable content related to the healthcare industry, they've got more than 8,000 episodes on demand waiting for you. From professional development, the patient voice, digital health, innovation and entrepreneurship, and of course, health IT, they've got you covered. So this is your official invitation to check them out at healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Hit Like a Girl podcast. This is High Tea with Grace, where we spill the tea on HIT. I'm delighted to welcome Angie Frank, CEO of Bout Healthcare, formerly known as Central Logic. Angie, we're excited to have you on today.
I'm super excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Grace.
So tell me a little bit about the company you lead, Bout Healthcare.
Tell you about?
Yeah, tell me all about.
Oh, I would absolutely love to. So About is all about helping health systems get patients to the optimal setting of care. That whole problem of care coordination and orchestration and access to the optimal setting for acute patients coming into the health system, patients being discharged and moving to the next best setting of care, whether that's, you know, post-acute or skilled nursing or rehab, or even going back to the home where they're being monitored and treated in a more acute status in the home setting, and then handling all of the logistics in between. We bring a technology and services and best practices and analytics to bear to help health systems make it much easier for matching the demand for services that they offer with the supply of resources and getting people in the optimal setting of care.
Wow, that is so amazing and clearly so important given where we've been the past few years. Why is it so important that health systems operate as one?
Yeah. What you just said is could not be more true. And that is where we've been this past year and a half has certainly illuminated the breadth of the problem. When we put strain on the system, demand on our healthcare system in ways that we could never have anticipated or predicted, and you could see where we started falling apart, where the system is just wasn't ready, wasn't organized. We weren't prepared to operate effectively, and it's hurt all of us. So certainly, I think in that regard, the last 18 months has been a phenomenal opportunity for us to go, all right, what do we need to do differently? And this has been, you know, for our company and for About, this has been an opportunity for us to bring more capabilities together to work with health systems on a broader basis to leverage some of these problems that we were solving in helping health systems operate as one system of care to bring that to a much broader scale basis. Why it's important is hospital systems have traditionally operated like a real estate portfolio. They have sites of care that's all in a network. They've got leaders of each one of those sites. They might have entire executive teams. They roll up, they're matrix organized. Each hospital, each care setting is really responsible for their own P&L. The problem that happens with that is you end up underutilizing some resources and having overcapacity or overutilize other resources, and you're not aligning the right patients always in the best setting of care. So you might have a patient that has a less acute condition in your most acute facility.
Wow.
And the costs and the revenue misalignment are significant. So how do you start utilizing your entire health system, all of your staff, all of the physical resources to make conscious decisions and put patients in the best setting? And that's how we really first start to help them operate as one system of care.
Yeah, that is really fascinating. You know, and with the new COVID-19 variant coming up, and you know, flu season, we're in full yeah. swing, and RSVs going around with seniors right. and babies, and you know, it's really, how do we keep this patient care, you know, at the focus when patients are having to wait for care because health systems are overwhelmed, you know, and nursing shortages are at an all-time high. You know, how do we keep those patients kind of at the center of what's going on here?
That's right. That's right. So everything that we do in healthcare, for healthcare technology, for about, is all about the patient. As how do we ensure that they are in the best setting at the right time? They get there efficiently. When they're ready to be moved from one setting, we're helping facilitate and get them moved. Because none of us, we don't want to be sitting in an inpatient bed if we can be at home recovering, or if should be in a rehab or a post-acute facility. We want to, you know, it's best for our healing and our recovery. For the hospital system, it's best if they've got patients that are ready to be moved to post-acute or to home, that they free those beds up and those resources up for the next patient that needs it on the more acute status, the more, the sicker patient that needs that inpatient bed. So the system operates more effectively when you can really start bringing these pieces together and utilize your entire network of care for making those placement decisions. For the health system, it means a couple of things. So if you take the patient and you get the patient to the best setting, clinically, they have a better outcome. When you move a patient in an acute need into the inpatient and you get them there faster and more efficiently, they have a better.
So it's not even just, you know, important for the hospital and health system's resources. It's important for the patient's overall care and outcomes clinically.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so that's kind of first and foremost. Next, the hospital operates more efficiently. Third, it's a revenue. This becomes a revenue engine. When you make it easy to do business with your health systems and easy to get patients in and through and out to the next best setting of care, you become a destination for other referrals, for other providers to send patients your way. The patient has a great experience and they want to come back and keep their care inside of your network.
Yeah, it's just good business at this point.
It's just good business. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It shifts it to be proactive. We put in place a consistent way of handling these decisions. And now you've got reduced variation, operational efficiency, leveraging your resources. And I think in today's day and age, we can't not talk about the pressures that we have on our workforce, on our nurses, on the physicians, on inpatient, you know, case managers. All health system workers right now are under such tremendous pressure. If we can take a little bit of noise out of those processes and make things operate easier and let them focus on the patient, I mean, we're doing good.
It's a win-win. Absolutely. It makes a ton of sense. I wanted to talk with you a little bit today about the patient leakage survey that you guys recently did. What is patient leakage and what did your survey find?
Yeah, no, great question. So patient leakage is when it sounds like a clinical term.
A medical condition. Do you have patient linkage?
You know, it's one of those terms where you go, maybe we should kind of change the term in the industry. Sometimes you got to just go with the flow, right? This is
descriptive, so let's keep it. Yeah.
So we're talking business, not a clinical term here. So the business term patient leakage is losing patients that you may have had captured in your system and they got referred out and sent outside of your system because you didn't have good ways to make it easy for your providers inside of your network to keep them in the health system. That's one type of leakage. Another would be it's almost like lost opportunity because you're inefficient and not as effective as maybe a competitor down the street on capturing a patient transfer. You make it hard for referring sources to send you a patient. You lose those patients and they get referred elsewhere. So leakage can be you lose them once you've got them or you lose them in the process because you're inefficient. But no matter what way you look at it, leakage is a big problem for health systems because it's lost opportunity. Yeah. It's lost revenue.
Mm-hmm. And so many of these health systems are really struggling, you know, and to stay alive, stay afloat sometimes. And so to have make sure they're keeping those patients is very important. Did your survey show?
Yeah. So our survey showed that this is a big problem for health systems and an area of focus. And they are looking for more ways to address patient leakage. And this is a priority for health systems to, you know, to begin to solve and address, plug those gaps, operate as one system of care, define more standards and processes for their health system to better acquire and bring patients in the front door and then put in place those processes to plug the gaps where patients are leaking out and they're actually referring their own patients out to other competitive health systems. So it's a revenue and an operational priority. And at the end of the day, it's an important, important for the patient experience as well.
Absolutely. Another thing, you know, we're hearing a lot about right now is just closing the gaps of healthcare equity or making sure that we're giving equitable healthcare. How can some of this patient orchestration help, you know, with healthcare access and health equity?
Yeah, it's such a great question. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to give a real life example of how this plays out every day within about clients. During the pandemic, so one of the things that we saw, I think, as a nation, was there were issues with access and disparities in care for people that had less access to care. We have seen really negative outcomes, and I think this has really really brought this issue to light for the industry as a whole. We did some really innovative work in the state of Arizona. We were just fortunate to already be partnered with the largest health system in Arizona, and that's Banner Health. Wow. We have been a partner with Banner for a number of years, work very closely together. Banner was tapped by the state of Arizona to help them proactively, you know, get prepared for this influx of patients and influx of demand that they saw coming after watching what was happening in New York City early in the pandemic. And so the state became very active in planning and preparation. They turned to Banner and they said, here's what we want to do. We want to see if we can work together as an entire state, as a system of care, and make sure that we load balance the demand that's coming in and we don't let any one facility get overburdened with demand and therefore not being able to keep up with the patient needs.
That is so logical. And it's so fascinating too, because the populations of Arizona, you have rural, you have urban, you have suburban, you have Navajo nations. I mean, there's a huge diverse population in Arizona.
That is exactly right. And the Navajo Nation was one where they had the largest per capita outbreak of COVID in the world. So 800 people came down with COVID. Now the Navajo Nation and the hospitals that are in and around that area, those are teeny hospitals that had no ability to handle that type of demand. But this solution, when the state worked with Banner, pulled together not only our technology, but some other technologies into one shared service center that the Arizona Department of Health Services operated, they were able to move those patients, make the decisions, find the available capacity, and get the patient to the care that they needed very efficiently, which meant all people in Arizona, regardless of where they lived, regardless of their circumstances, had the ability to get care anywhere in the state and have that be facilitated efficiently so that they could heal and get well. And, you know, it was a real tangible example of how can we do that, you know, in our own communities, making sure that we're getting patients access to the care that they need, regardless of socioeconomic, their ability to pay, their history in using the healthcare system, whatever it might be, that we're making sure that we're getting access to care for all. And I just think it's such a tremendous example of how that came together.
Absolutely. So what an inspirational story of people really coming together and resources and software and everything coming together to manage the COVID cases in Arizona. So I want to kind of dive into a little bit about your personal leadership style. You know, you are the CEO of a company, a very busy company, clearly, and doing very important things in healthcare, health IT. How do you approach leadership and how does that approach impact the culture at the company that you are running and leading?
Well, you know what? So I'll start by saying I probably approach my entire leadership style as, you know, treating people the way I'd want to be treated. So first of all, you know, we spend more time together in our day jobs with the people that we work with than who we spend, you know, time with. You know, the time that we spend with our families is less compared to the time that we're typically spending in the office and with our colleagues. So, you know, how do you create an environment where people can do their best work?
Yeah.
How do you create an environment where people understand where it is that we're going, you know, understand the vision, capture people in their heart. I feel really strongly that, you know, we can talk all day, like we can put spreadsheets up and all sorts of technical data. And it's like, no, people need to be captured. They need to know that they're part of a company where every day the work that we do is impacting patient lives and it's impacting it for the better. And while we might never be known to that patient and we might never know who those people are, they're out there. And when you start talking, I mean, I get the luxury of being able to tell our story lots of different places, and it is inevitable. I go out in a public setting, I tell the story about what we do and how we do it, and somebody will come up to me after and they will tell me their personal story, and it will be, and then they'll ask me, "Do you work with this health system? Because this is where it happened, and you know, we got there quickly, or we didn't. We had a really bad outcome, and do you work at this health system?" It happens every single time I give a public presentation. So to our staff, you know, we're unsung heroes behind the scenes, but we're doing something super meaningful, super impactful, that at somebody's worst day of their life, when they really need to get care urgently and you know, in an inpatient setting, we're there helping to make that happen. And so that's rewarding. I think that's just an important part from my perspective on leadership, is that we help connect, you know, the what we do to the why it matters, so that people that are part of our team are compelled and captivated by the mission. And then, you know, they know where we're going, they're captivated by the mission, they understand their role and how we're making this all happen, so that people have clarity. But then we put fun, you know, in this. I'm kind of a, you know, I want to have fun when I'm at work.
Woo! Everybody loves to hear that from a CEO.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know. That's my personality. So I'm sure my personality comes through quite a bit in the culture. We do things like when COVID happened and all of a sudden, you know, what we knew coming in every day, seeing our coworkers, building those relationships, having those connections were just kind of gone very quickly. And, you know, one of the things that we did was we said, we've got to stay connected as people and stay connected as a team. And we're adding more people to our staff, and we're hiring and onboarding at a time where people don't get a chance to, you know, come in the office every day and meet their coworkers. So we do things like we do a stand up twice a week, and whole company, we all get on. We started off with music. There's always a song of the day.
I love that. What kind of music? It's like jazz, rock, like.
Yes, all of the above.
And is it Spotify? Do people perform?
Oh, we've had people that said, I want to do the song of the day and can I sing? And it's unbelievable. Like the talent we have in this company is fantastic. So it is a real galvanizing point for us to, we do this stand up one day a week is a topic, and we cover, you know, business updates, et cetera. And then the other stand up that for the week is on Friday, and that's the employee of the day. And they pick the music and then they tell us all about themselves. And we all feel, you know, super connected, and, you know, builds culture, and it makes it fun to work here. And, you know, we're going to do a cookie decorating thing via Zoom, you know, next week as, you know, part of our culture. So we do, I guess, getting back to your question as a leader, I just feel like you got to create an environment for people to do their best work and show up in the best way possible and treat them the way you'd want to be treated and capture them in their heart, and great things happen. And that's how I lead.
That's fantastic. Well, you know, I love that whole idea of making sure you have fun and that connectivity, and how critical that is for getting the best product, especially when if the product is as important as what you guys are providing. A little birdie told me that you do strength training, and I would love to hear a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah.
You can actually hit like a girl. Talk about hit like a girl.
I do. I pumped some iron here this morning. Yeah, I love to work out. I got away from it for a number of years. This is probably now, you know, 8 or 9 years ago. I think I was so consumed in my job at the time that I lost focus on, you know, my own health and well-being, and I stopped working out, and it was just bad outcomes. I gained weight. I just didn't feel good. I didn't have as much of an energy level when I probably needed it the most. And so I made a commitment to myself to get back into exercise and fitness and make it a priority in my life, to where I really rarely compromise. So I'm in the gym 5 to 6 days a week. Wow. I lift 4 days a week, and I do cardio the other 2 days. I do cardio every day that I lift, but yeah, I feel at least from everything I've read, combining cardio and strength training is just, you know, just kind of maximizes the health benefits. I feel better with muscle than I do without muscle. So, and I've got a frame that needs to have muscle on it. Otherwise it's just better if I'm exercising.
Yeah. And so many leadership lessons that we can learn too, I think, as a community, in prioritizing health and fitness to work your best. Do you feel like it really helps you build the strength of your company being personally strong? Physically strong.
Mm-hmm. I do because I think more clearly. I mean, I'm pretty regimented on my routine. I get up at 4:15 in the morning. I'm in the gym by 4:40. I get my workout in, which usually takes about an hour, maybe a little more. I go home, get ready, and I come into the office. By the time I'm in here, I've been up a few hours. I've been thinking through my day. You know, I feel like I have a energy level. I feel ready to go. So I think it does help on clarity of thought, and just giving you, it also gives you a little bit of, you know, personal time in your day. So I feel when there are those days where I skipped the workout for whatever reason, I just actually came off of a back injury, which was like, oh my gosh.
Oh, that's so hard.
It was only a week.
Was it a stress fracture? I feel like it probably was.
I wish I could say I was, you know, really hitting it hard in the gym. I was standing there doing, you know, my barbell curls. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, something just kind of felt funny in my back and it just spasmed. And so I had a week of that. So, but when I don't get into the gym, I actually feel more fatigued during the day and less energy than when I go in and work out. And so then I also apply my other like business principles to my workout. I log my workout every single day, what I do cardio, what I do for lifting and all sorts of little notes about my exercises so that I can keep adjusting it. I adjust my, my workout every 4 to 6 weeks so that my body doesn't ever get totally comfortable. A little muscle confusion is good.
That's amazing. Well, I love to hear that. And, you know, it's really, I think, interesting to hear too about the clarity of thought in addition to the strengthening of your body and pushing it just enough to keep getting stronger and stronger.
Yeah, really, exactly. Really change it up. Yeah. And you know what I think? Then when you talk about it, you come in, you talk about it at the office and other people are like, hey, I'm doing a workout. And I think it breeds community. I mean, it breeds other people, you know, then maybe challenging themselves and talking about what they're doing to exercise. And it becomes a little bit part of the fabric of the company where, you know, we also put healthy snacks in here. We don't have, you know, jars of M&Ms sitting around. We have, you know, a fruit bowl and granola bars and peanut butter.
Yeah. Yes, like that's great. Like that. It kind of does set the tone for the culture of the company. Yeah. You know, this is what we do. And when you work it about, this is what you are do and what it's like, and you can, they can connect at another level. Yeah. On that.
Got it.
That's interesting. So I'm wondering, what's your favorite podcast or book right now that you're currently into? Do you listen to podcasts?
I have just gotten into listening to more and more podcasts. And I do find my drive, I don't have, you know, like the hour drive each way every day. So it's not like I only have about a 15-minute drive. So but I read a lot and I do love to read books. I actually just finished the book called Grant. And it's a historical. So I really like historical fiction. I have read every single Michener book. And, you know, I've read a lot of the, like all the Ken Follett series. And so I'm into historical fiction. The book that I read about Grant, I read Lincoln, you know, a year or so ago. I just find them fascinating, fascinating stories to understand leaders and people at points in our, you know, our history of our country where they were faced with making decisions and leading and motivating people and teams with the challenges that they were facing. I just find it.
It is so interesting how the just, you know, to think about how many of their problems and issues, while different back then, how they approach those problems and issues are very applicable today to any problems and issues that come our way. It's absolutely very inspiring timeless.
Inspiring.
Story.
Yeah. It's also, you know, I think we can easily become feeling like victims, you know, if we're all, you know, things are so bad or this is so wrong or we've got it. So it's like, no, we got to just pull ourselves up. And I think you can get really grounded when you read, you know, if we think this is tough, like here, read this book, read what these people were facing or go to this country and see something, you know, different or go look in this industry and see some of the challenges that they face. Mm-hmm. And it gives perspective. And I think we could all use lots of perspective as good in today's day and age. So
yeah, it really
opens up
that.
A window for me of different perspective, different time, timeless challenges.
Yeah, timeless challenges and lessons. So I'd love to hear, you know, before we finish our podcast today, what's some of the work that you've been most proud of in your career to date?
Well, the Arizona example, just to be part of being able to mobilize at that time in our country. Wow. I feel really proud to that I was part of the company that was also part of that broader solution. So that to me is inspiring and exciting. I wish we could have had the opportunity to do more of that. And I think we will with other, you know, other states and other, you know, other regions of the country. We certainly are working with, you know, hundreds of hospitals across the country today. And that is very rewarding. I would say My career has, I stumbled into healthcare. I did not have any intent. I didn't go to college and get a degree in, you know, nursing or business with the intent of being in the healthcare industry, but I stumbled into it. And I feel like every step of the way through my career, I've had the opportunity to work inside of companies, work with leaders where we are doing something so mission driven, so purposeful to, bettering our communities and people's lives, that I just feel like the collective whole of my career has felt super rewarding, and meaningful. And I feel proud of that. I feel proud that, and we all get, these opportunities, I'm sure, where you can make a lot of money and go do something else and, work in another industry that might not have the same level of mission feel to it. And that I'm probably most proud that I've, for almost my entire career, there's a couple of years I took a break from healthcare, and that was actually, I think, really beneficial as well for me, but stayed really focused on working in an industry where people's lives are.
Yeah, so inspiring and rewarding to have an integral role in helping save lives. It truly is. So to finish off this conversation, right, where can our listeners find you online?
Sure. You mean the company?
Yeah.
Yes, they can find us online at abouthealthcare.com. And we have lots of resources out there and good resources available for anybody in the industry. But that would be where I would start, is abouthealthcare.com.
That's terrific. And before I forget, did you happen to bring tea with you today?
I brought my tea. Similar to you, I've got my plain white mug.
Actually, my mug is a mug I brought myself that said "World Best Mom." Which I don't know if it is true if you buy it for yourself, but I was like, I deserve this.
You deserve it. You absolutely are the world's best mom, and you should be holding that mug. I have my plain white mug because these are the mugs that we have in the office that all of our staff can use. And so I just, use what's here. But filled inside my mug is my favorite tea, and that is a London Fog.
That is also my favorite tea. London Fog is amazing. And for those of you that haven't had it, it's like an Earl Grey, creamy Earl Grey mixture.
A little honey, creamy.
A dash of lavender if you have it.
Yes, if you have it, put the lavender there. It is, you just might not ever go back to coffee once you've had a London Fog.
It's good for the soul. Like it literally, you drink it and you're like, you feel the warmth and the creaminess
On a day where it's not snowing yet, but we're going to have a snowstorm here. So this is a good London Fog day.
That is too good. We also just had a snowstorm over here. So I'm feeling the tea deep inside my soul today.
Nice.
Well, that is too good. Thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you to our listeners for watching. Check out the Hit Like a Girl podcast and YouTube page for other great guests just like the one today. Cheers.
Cheers.
Like a Girl Media is more than a media network. It's a community. We want to meet you and amplify your voice and the voices of outstanding women innovating in healthcare. Interested in starting your own podcast or hosting an event near you? Connect with us online or in person. We're here to support and empower you.
This episode is brought to you by Chirpy Bird, Inc. CMS's Merit-Based Incentive Payment System, or MIPS, is super complex. And if clinicians ignore the program or perform poorly in it, it can result in a hit to their revenue and reputation. Chirpy Bird is proud to say that more than 95% of its clients are exceptional performers in MIPS, meaning they've maximized the score that directly translates into their Medicare reimbursement rate. Chirpy Bird offers their audit-proof services to practices of all sizes through an affordable monthly subscription that includes unlimited access to a regulatory expert who guides them in knowing what data to track, how to create workflows that make capturing that data easier, and ensures that they submit it all to CMS on time and performing at its best. Contact Chirpy Bird today or learn more at chirpybirdinc.com. That's chirpybirdinc.com.